Dinner with the President. From Fox News Radio, I'm Dana Perino.
I'm Chris Steirwalt, then. That would be.
That is true. And this is Perino and Steirwalt. I'll tell you what. Finally, back together.
Together again, and both of us with real recordings. This is like, we know summer is over. And fall is nigh if we're back to reality.
I just had a fall moment. So it's a little bit rainy in New York City. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I usually walk home from work. And so I usually, like, will wear walking shoes or whatever to here.
It's so sensible footwear.
It is September. And so I grew up in the West. Like, in September, the evenings are cool, right? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of raining outside. So I immediately think, oh, okay, this is time for me to wear jeans and my Ronald Reagan sweatshirt.
No. Oh, no.
And I go down. I was going to take the subway so I could get here early and study for this podcast. It is so hot and humid outside. And then down there, it was really hot and humid. And the trains are late. And then we all finally get on the train. And then you hear the conductor said, "I smell smoke. Everybody get off the train." So then I ran up the stairs walked all the way to Fox. Okay. I was, like, melting from the inside out. You would have...
I would have needed...
probably fainted.
They would have had to pack my trousers with dry ice to even get me. I walked to Union Station. I walked a block and a half away and back. It was so humid that I had to take my suit coat off as I was walking. I came in, and they did have to hit me with the hair dryer on cold, just to stop the sweat enough for me to take makeup and go on television.
What did you talk about?
I don't. Some stuff. We're whopper jawed. The news climate is whopper jawed right now.
I know. Before we get to that, can we talk about how great Peter was on the podcast?
I say without any reservation that was my favorite. I'll tell you what. Ever. That
oh my gosh. That's amazing. You don't like to listen to yourself. Do you actually listen to these podcasts?
I do some. Well, the small humans like them.
I mean, everybody should listen to this podcast.
Everyone should. But sometimes I hear them.
Oh, the humans. The little humans want to hear it.
The small humans.
I see.
The smaller, the wee pundits like to hear them. And they like you. And they like when we talk about them. And they like discussions about dogs. And they like dumb jokes. So this is really
right up their alley.
This is really the sweet spot. You throw in a little trivia
also,
and constitutional law.
Oof. You took them to the National Book Festival.
Boy, wasn't that good.
But tell America what their favorite author is, or the series of books.
So his name is Dave, and he spells Dave Pilkey, and he is the author of the Captain Underpants series, recently made into a movie, and I was highly skeptical of the literary and cultural and developmental virtues of a book called Captain Underpants. And you know what? They're great. Those books are great. All his stuff is great.
What's his superpower?
I won't get all the way into, but basically it is the story. It's the story of two misfit kids who are in grammar school age, and they're rebel. They're embracing their weirdness and the weird parts of themselves. And the guy was great in his talk at the National Book Festival, which Laura Bush started in 2001 with the Library of Congress. And it was so great to go. And they had it at the Washington Convention Center. There were thousands of people there. Mm-hmm. And there were people who were interested in Civil War history. And there were people there for kids' books. And there were people there for cooking books. And there were authors. Mm-hmm. And the excitement and the happiness and the good, the bonhomie through this crowd, through all of these people. It was just such a nice space. And
so that author gave a talk? To the
kids?
Yeah,
he gave a talk. He gave a talk, and he talked about his experience about, and it was really great because he talked about his experience about being labeled and the weight of the labels. And he had a little animated cartoon to go with his talk. I guess all cartoons are animated, duh. But he had this that talked about they labeled him as ADHD, and they labeled him as this and that and dyslexia, and the mounting weight that crushed him down, and about how he didn't come around the corner until he heard what his mother was really trying to tell him, which is, yes, you are you have these labels, but that also makes you different and it makes you see the world in a different way. And that's what put him into art, and that's what put him into writing, and that's how he learned to embrace those things and do that. And I thought that that was a particularly good message for, you know, when you're 9, 10, 11 years old, the ocean gets a lot of feelings, gets a lot deeper. Things get a lot stormier out there as you become aware of a fuller depth of your feelings and the fuller depth of what's going on in the world and the real presence of evil, the real risks. The world gets big fast. And helping kids in that phase understand that, you know, there has never been anyone exactly like you before. Mm-hmm. There will never be anybody exactly like you again. This is your moment to figure out who is it that God made you to be and what do I need to do to put that into motion. And that's awesome.
A great message.
Yeah. I'm reading into it a little.
I had a great reading summer.
Yeah.
Because when the five moved to 9 p.m., I said, okay, you get all the permission to read all the fiction that you want and just enjoy this time.
Right.
And I'm just going to tell you, there's one book I'm on to say that I really liked and another one I'm going to say I did not like. And I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to say why I am in not in the mainstream when it comes to not liking that book.
So this is Express Your Unpopular Opinion time.
Yes.
Okay.
So the book that I really liked is called Stay With Me. And it's by a woman named Ayo.
Ann Padgett.
No, but it was recommended by her. Ayobami Adebayo. I hope I'm saying that correctly. She was born in Nigeria and then did schooling in England. And this book is a debut novel, and it knocked my socks off.
Oh, cool.
Really, really good about family and life, and the way that she can talk, tell a story with some local flavor, right? So, like, you're in Nigeria in the situation, but the story hangs together so well, and there's twists and turns, and it's really not that long a novel, and it was great. So, I have to highly recommend that one. Here's one that was also recommended by Ann Patchett,
okay.
And I did not like it. This is unusual.
Uh-oh.
But I'm telling you, this book to me was not good. And I never actually say, I never do this. I never talk about books that I don't like. I only talk about books that I like.
If you don't have anything nice to say.
Right, if I don't have anything nice to say. But there's a book called Mrs. Fletcher, and it's written by Tom Perotta, who's a celebrated author. And
yes,
you know how like
so.
The authors like authors? It's like reporters
yes.
write for other reporters.
Right.
So authors kind of like write for each other in a way. There's
right.
like this sort of, maybe TV people do that for TV. So this book was basically to me like a poor attempt at some soft porn weirdness that was supposed to be kind of funny, but it's really not. And everybody's a disaster in this book. There's not one likable character in it. I don't think it hangs together well. And then I click on to read some of the reviews about it. Rave reviews from all the usual suspects. But I'm telling you, this is not a good book.
I I love Tom Wolfe.
Yeah, I like Tom Wolfe. Long books.
Oh, fiddle-dee-dee. I think I can say, without any reservation, checking, that in turn, he is my favorite living writer of literature.
Okay.
My favorite living fiction writer. And if you look at the way so he wrote a book called I Am Charlotte Simmons about sort of, it would focus on the hookup culture on American college campuses, like in the aughts at the turn of the century. And the way he handled a gross subject, right? Because it's gross. That's a gross topic. And especially if you're an old man in a white suit and you're writing about it, it could be so gross. The way he dealt with that bluntly, but without being – it's just so hard in a book to write about sex and write about sexual conduct without it becoming a – you know, do you remember the book that was popular in the 1990s called Vox? And it was about the phenomenon of what was then a thing, which was the phone.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it was a thing.
I didn't read things like that, nor did I like them on Twitter. I might add.
You might. Oh, dear. Oh, Ted Cruz.
I didn't say that.
I did. I'm there. I like Ted Cruz. He was very game about the whole thing. And also, I thought, to his eternal credit, he did not publicly shame or fire the person who did it, right?
But here's the other thing.
Yep.
Twitter has a bad setup.
True.
So you can just be scrolling through and accidentally like something. And that happened to, I believe it happened to Woody Johnson, now the Trump's ambassador to the United Kingdom.
Uh-huh.
He,
what did he like?
When he was the owner of the Jets.
Was it?
He was the owner of the Jets. And there was a controversy or a dispute about one of the players, and people thought he wasn't very good. And there was some sort of article to that effect that maybe he should be fired.
And he liked it.
And he liked it. Now, he wasn't a regular Twitter user, but I imagine that he was scrolling through and accidentally hit the heart button, which really should go back to being a star button anyway.
I agree, of course. But then there's also the question about what's in your timeline. It'd be one thing if it was that, but this is a thing that was that. And, you know, somebody left a browser open and blah, 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 blah. But I credit Ted Cruz. He could have roasted this person and thrown their carcass to the baying hounds that, you know, who was it? Well, we know it's you. You creep,
yeah,
you pervert. We hate you anyway.
Not necessary.
And then he could have harmed that person and said, "We shall fire thou."
I can't believe it was even a story on, like, I think it was on the Today Show.
Really?
That's ridiculous.
You can't believe that a United States senator liking a very explicit pornographic video is a story.
Wait, I guess I could see that
the media would want to do that.
But I actually think that I could, as an assignment editor, I think I would have said, let's just let that one pass.
Well, I don't think I would have assigned the story, but it is funny, especially because Ted Cruz is...
Okay.
No, okay.
I just
mean that you don't think of him in those terms.
No. Well, let's hope
can
not.
I ask you something?
Okay, can I just tell you one other thing before you ask me that?
Okay. Yeah.
Just on the subject of books and podcasts, and then we'll talk about politics, which is probably why people tuned in.
Maybe.
Did you know that the Weekly – I'm sorry, not Weekly Standard. Oh, my gosh. They'll probably shoot me. The National Review.
Lord
has a new podcast.
Jonah Goldberg is going to hit you with a
book. National Review has a new podcast called The Great Books. Have you heard about this?
What a National
Review
kind of
thing to do. And
they're starting
with Macbeth. So
okay.
I think that might be something you want to listen to.
Heck of a
just
great
don't
play.
Listen, don't read Mrs. Fletcher. Save yourself.
I will not read Mrs. Fletcher, but I wouldn't read Macbeth either. I would go see Macbeth.
No, I would see it. No, actually, I would get the Cliff Notes.
Oh, boo! And it's Cliff's notes.
Oh, well, whatever.
Whatever.
Well, Cliff's notes, like with an apostrophe S, like it was a guy named Cliff.
Yes.
Oh. He was great.
He was great.
I never used them, and I didn't even really understand what they were until
because Big D,
later.
Big D don't cheat. Big D don't cheat. No shortcuts. So my question for you is, what do you think of the White House calling for the firing of a reporter for ESPN?
Yeah, like I probably would not have done that. I think that I would have said, certainly it's for the company to decide. I think that one of the ways that could have been brought up is to say it would be nice if said company was consistent in their treatment and dealing with on-air talent who says something that is not representative of the company. Because we do know that Kurt Schilling was fired by ESPN.
Right.
And this woman, Jamel Hill, basically gets a slap on the wrist, a little bit of a public shaming, but actually it wasn't even that bad.
Right. So, and you can also imagine that this has probably helped her substantially.
With a certain crowd, sure.
But I think that's the crowd she was going for.
So I think you can actually make the point from the podium without suggesting a private company fire somebody because that also probably helped her.
Right. Exactly. Because now it's like the White House.
She's like, call my agent and raise my price.
Right. The White House wants me fired. So how big of a deal am I?
It is weird about ESPN. I said last night on the show that clearly everybody knows I don't know a lot about sports, and I like to watch sports.
You
kind of talk about sports, whatever. But I don't like it when sports, politics, and entertainment collide.
Right.
So I want them separate on my plate.
You
know, like one of those picnic plates, like the paper plates where you have it separated.
You eat like a cowboy.
I don't actually, not in real life, but for my entertainment consumption, that's what I like. is to keep it separate. So, I, like, for example, I can't stand it when I'm reading novels, and there are many of them that make political points, and they're almost always liberal and left-wing. I don't like it when, like, you know, NBC does that thing, or I don't know if they still do, it was Earth Week. So every show on the network had to be something about environment and climate change.
Like in Law and Order, it was like, I can't stand that.
Like, let's just, like, there's enough room here for all of us to have like a separate space, and let's keep those boundaries.
Also, ESPN, I saw actually ESPN today, and I like the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're a football team in Western Pennsylvania.
I know, I even know that's true.
And
Tony Sprato is a big fan.
I know. He loves America. So they had power rankings up, and then under it was – so Steelers are number one power ranking because they've had a fortuitous but very strong start to the season. So they're number one in their power rankings. And the line underneath and on the television – I'm eating sausage. And the line under it was – what bothers you most about Steelers' number one ranking, question mark? And it's like, well, why are you just making fake controversies about stuff all of the time?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't watch ESPN. I don't consume their product, for not because it's political. That doesn't help. But also it is needless, stupid, endless controversy. It is the manufacturer constant. It does to sports what bad journalists do to politics, which is everything must be milked for maximum controversy, maximum anxiety, maximum whatever kernel of anguish can be extracted from anything must always be extracted.
Didn't you write about that in Halftime Report this week about clickability?
Oh, well.
You wrote about this, right?
I got very mad at voters today. I was very cross with the American electorate today because so as you know, Sunday is Constitution Day, and what a fine you know that it is a fine thing to have final ratification 19th of September, and Bonewald, don't roast me, I can't remember 1788. Anyway, good
87,
times.
87. I thought it was 87, but final. I don't know.
Final rat. So we have final ratification. So this is the anniversary. This is yay. And so the Annenberg Public Policy Center at University of Philadelphia, or University of Pennsylvania, is obliged to, as part of its mission, plumb public opinion on matters relating to our founding charter, and. One in three Americans in this survey, and it is a reputably conducted survey, could not identify a single branch of government. Not one. A third of adults could not identify, couldn't just go out there and say like the president or something, nothing, which tells me that they do not understand separation of powers. Which tells me that they do not understand literally what country they are living in. You know, we have so much focus in the United States on consumerism that consumerism even clouds the way that we understand our government. And the way that we understand our government is what's in it for me. I get to say whatever I want because I live in America. I get rights in court because I live in America. I have these things. I consume these products, these fruits of liberty. I consume them because I'm an American. What we do not spend any time or effort or much time or effort doing is explaining the owner's manual of what this thing, this magical machine that produces these inalienable rights or no, that protects and defends these inalienable rights, what is it? We have people who think one of the – for example, we're having – in Washington, we're having a lot of pointless conversations about health insurance right now. Well, we think it ought to be single payer. Well, we think it ought to be repealed, and everybody who voted for Obama should be thrown into a thicket of thorns and spat upon. And we're having the very dumb – it's a very dumb and pointless conversation because these none of these things will happen, and these are all posturing for 2018 gobbledygook. And I think, do the people, so we have heard now for a long time, people are angry. Okay, cool. Stipulate. I've driven in traffic. I'm aware that people are angry. So we hear people are angry because the government doesn't work. And then I thought, what if it's not that the government doesn't work, which it doesn't. I mean, it fails. But what if it's not so much that the government doesn't work? What if it's that people don't even know what the government is? What if they don't even know what the government does? What if they don't even know what a republic is? What if we have reached a point where ignorance is so deep? I think it was about a quarter of people could identify three branches of government, which is, of course, what I foolishly assumed that most Americans should be able to do and that I would expect of any reasonably educated seventh grader, or certainly of both of my children who are not in seventh grade, I would expect them to know. What if people just don't even know what the government is and they don't even know what it's supposed to do? So, of course, they're angry. So, of course, they're dissatisfied. And this leads us to more anger and more dissatisfaction because, as a friend of mine once said, they're talking about another thing, you don't go to Home Depot for milk, right? And if you keep showing up at Home Depot and you say, okay, where's the milk? And they go, it's a hardware store. We don't have any milk. And you're like, this is the worst store ever. I hate this place. And you keep coming back day after day. And every day you walk out and you say, this is the worst place ever. And inside they're going, we have nails. We have no milk. And I think we really may be at that point that Americans can't tell, practically speaking, the difference between a democracy and a republic. They cannot understand. They do not – not enough Americans. We're beyond the point of critical mass. And that's where I start to feel that our self-governance and our republic is really in jeopardy.
So there's a complacency that America works well enough that you don't have to really worry about how it works.
Right. And when I see these...
Or is it that our education system is not making things stick or not putting enough emphasis on civics education early on?
I think that these are... There's a ratcheting effect here. So schools are driven by local concerns, mostly. And when people care a lot about civics... So I believe we have a crisis in civics education in America. I believe this is a nonpartisan, transpartisan issue that schools do not teach civics, not to the degree that they should. It should be as important. It is as important as algebra. It is as important as spelling. This is crucial. And it doesn't take long, right? It's a semester. It's two semesters.
Well, it's a pretty simple and elegant system.
That's the idea. Mm-hmm. And so I think I am very sympathetic to educators who are overwhelmed and beleaguered by – so this is the ratcheting effect I'm talking about. More and more is asked of schools. Schools are medium security correctional institutions. They are they supplant basic roles about teaching kids things like hygiene, how to manage money, how to be an adult, how to be things that previously would have been taken care of in families and in the larger culture. Those things now increasingly fall to schools to discipline, raise, all of these other things. It's not a place to get educated so much as it is a place of formation. And so all of these burdens fall on schools, and then there's testing and there's all these other things. Civics, which sounds hokey and corny, maybe a lot easier to – so you say, well, are we going to cut music or are we going to cut civics? Well, let me give away the ending. They end up cutting both. Both go away, and we really do have that problem. So, but I am sympathetic. It's not educators' fault necessarily. It is also the fault of communities who want their priorities reflected in schools.
Is this a new poll that they've done, or do they show?
Brand new.
Okay, it would be interesting to see how it's gone down, if it has.
I will look back over time, but you know, if we don't, honest to God, if we do not as Americans give up our addiction to clickbait and trolling and stoking the anguish and rage of other people, if we do not stop, this is what's crumbling around us, right? The people who are engaged in politics and civic life who are reading and who are educated are consumed with these hatreds of destroying each other and dragging partisanship and politics into every junction. This is not about any of those things. This is about, do we agree? I'm looking at Hillary Clinton's book, for example, and I thought, you have so squandered the great opportunities that you have had in your life. You say you want to be a role model, and that the way that you're going to be a role model is that you are going to be relentless in pursuit of your own ambition. And I think even now, you've been the First Lady of the United States. You've been a senator from the second largest state. Well, no, the third largest state. The third largest state. You have been the Secretary of State. You have been the nominee of a major political party. You have done these things. You have reached, you have been to the mountaintop. You did not ascend it, but you have been to the mountaintop. And you are using your notoriety and fame to blame others, to settle political scores, to be petty and be out there. A teacher working in a middle school to teach children about what the Constitution is and does, and what, and importantly, what you are obliged to as a citizen, what your duties and responsibilities are as a citizen, does more positive good than Hillary Clinton does in this entire book tour and all of her this next grasp at celebrity. That teacher does more, and Hillary Clinton does more affirmative harm by cudgeling relentlessly partisan, selfish, narrow interest and ambition than a lot of other people will today.
Also, there was that thing that you pointed out today, which is that the debt crisis is upon us.
Oh, Lord. Did you see? So every year the census puts out the numbers. This is the economic condition of America, and it's from the year before. So it's not like a ticker. They pulled out all the core samples and found everything. So good news, America, the recovery was really upon us in 2016 in a way that we did not know, or that real-time data did not show. Real household incomes jumped, most of all for Hispanic Americans. They experienced the Hispanic households saw the largest increase in median household income. Poverty went way down. So things got materially better in 2016. There are some questions about disparity here. One, I would point out, African-American households now have a median household income less than half of that of Asian households. Mm. That is an astonishing discrepancy. But if you peel back further, I forget what the actual percentage is. It's like
39.7. Yeah.
What is it?
I thought it was 39.1% or something like that.
But basically, approaching 40% of Americans now get their health care through the government.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes Medicare, Medicaid. That includes people who work for the government. That includes the military. When you put everybody together, gets their health insurance through the government, it's this growing, growing number. But the increase was driven by what's happening in Medicare. And what happened in Medicare last year was that basically they went up by its share. I won't say this the right way, but basically they went up by almost a half point. Now, when you do a multiplier across a population of 325 million people of a half point and you start having those, last year was the beginning of when the baby boomers show up in Medicare in really big numbers and the boom, boom, boom. We have a $20 trillion debt. No one in Washington right now is credibly or seriously talking about what happens to my children and my grandchildren and their children when we stick them with this bill. We've been in this period of low interest rate borrowing, and we just borrow. We take all this money. I'm listening to conversations in Washington right now. Republicans and Democrats are like shooting money out of a T-shirt gun mm-hmm. at a baseball game. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, and money, and you get money, and disaster. Well, of course we need another. Well, throw another $30 billion on. So they're spending all that money. That's chicken feed compared to what these numbers are telling us about Medicare.
Yep.
The Medicare costs are heading for total catastrophe. And these numbers come out, and it's like, dun, 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 hey, what about Ted Cruz liking a porno?
Right.
Oh, okay. And you think, folks, when the bill comes due on this, we'll be dead. Or some of us will. I probably will be when the full magnitude of the weight of this comes down. But we are only now 5 years, 10 years away from seeing things like Medicaid bankrupt, about real crisis where we're starting to talk about excise taxes. We will look back on this time and say, what a waste, what a squandering of not an opportunity, but what an abrogation of responsibility. I'm a real downer.
I know. So that's why we should probably just hit – I want to hit this question real fast, and then we got to go to the mailbag because we're going to run out of time, and Jason's going to cut you. He's going to have to cut you. I don't even know what that means, really. I think it's slang for something.
Cut you, man.
What do you make of the new bipartisan efforts from the White House? I mean, if you look at all the polls, people say they want bipartisanship. Can they actually get it?
Well, I do not think that the Democratic electorate will tolerate much, right? It's fun. Donald Trump and the Democratic leadership are alike in hating Republicans, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, yeah, those guys, I hate them. And Donald Trump and Democrats are currently enjoying – some Democrats are currently enjoying the idea of really sticking it to the Republicans. Like, yeah, watch this. What if we just spent all the money? What if we just did whatever we wanted all the time? And then we'd have infrastructure too, and we would, you know, do whatever we wanted. A couple things. One, try getting that to the floor. Right. All this stuff about Steve Bannon. Oh, well, you know, we're going to take out Paul Ryan and we're going to do. OK, go for who wants the job? They asked Mark Meadows, probably the most likely contender. And he said, oh, no. Now, I'm not running for speaker. I don't want to be speaker. No one wants to be Speaker of the House. No one wants Mitch McConnell's job. And they still control what's coming out. So there's that practical consideration. But there's this. The Democratic base hates Donald Trump like God hates sin. And there is no way that they are going to tolerate. Look, there's Joe Manchin who's basically drifting out into what was the name of the guy from Colorado? Ben Nighthorse Campbell territory. He's like – he's floating out into a – he's preparing to do a full Ben Nighthorse Campbell sans headdress. But other than this couple people, the Democratic Party at large will tolerate – Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi will soon pay serious consequences with the Democratic electorate if they are seen as empower. They must hashtag resist at all times or they will be
right.
They will pay a price.
It's interesting.
It's quite interesting.
It is interesting. What do you got in the mailbag?
Mailbag. I went through and I favorited all of these G-rated posts so that when I came in, I'm trying a different approach, so that when I came in, I would be able to ask you quickly, well-curated questions.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, did you read about Hillary Clinton sitting on Quest bars and eating them?
Yeah, not happening. First of all, because, you know, I don't like the bars.
Right. But the Quest bar is not the worst
of
the bars.
It's one of the worst. It's one of the worst.
But using gluteal warmth to warm any of your food is a – that seems like as they would say
– Hey, but look. I mean, it was kind of enterprising.
Well, but as they,
and
as
you
they
gotta do what you gotta do when you're on the campaign trail.
As they would say in 100, I don't know that I'd have told that one.
Right. There are something. It's your book. You can leave it out.
Right. It's your book. You can leave it out.
But it does provide some color.
It. I hope it didn't provide any color. Jerry Wegzin.
Mm-hmm.
Wegerson, would I be willing? Do you think that I should go head to head in a trivia battle with Peter?
Yeah,
I think that would be good. I think we should set that up.
Okay.
And Jerry even suggests that it should be at Christmas time.
Okay. Okay.
He's got it all.
This is
thought
his
out.
Christmas gift that he wants. Okay.
Yeah, Jerry's Christmas gift is he wants.
Well, put
Twitter.
It on the list.
He wants a battle royale. Okay. Me and Peter. Peter will probably win because he.
Well, we could pre-tape that and then have it for our podcast.
Oh, that would be a holiday. A very, and we can have nog. We can we can all have nog.
Okay.
William Harrison wants to know, not Henry, just regular. What was the most difficult news you gave when you were in the White House? What was the hardest news you had to deliver when you were in the White House?
To the press, to the public. Mm-hmm. I think personally it was the news that Tony Snow had gone in for exploratory surgery just to check that everything was okay on the cancer front. And he called me 2 days after the surgery to give me the bad news that it had returned. It was treatable, but I remember I got the call like right before I had to go out to do the briefing. And it was the first time, and I think actually it was the only time I teared up in the briefing, but no tears spilled over. But I remember in particular Peter Baker, who was then of the Washington Post, he's now at the New York Times, was there and was just gave me a little nod of encouragement, and I pushed through and was able to deliver bad news. You know, we were in the middle of the war, and of course the insurgency in Iraq, so that was tough because there were often mass casualties to have to report. Those were always the worst, and of course that includes any time any of our soldiers lost their lives.
Yeah. Knight of the Right wants to know, if you could instantly acquire one skill that you don't already have, what would it be?
Negotiation. I am not a good negotiator.
Really?
I never took a class
in it. You win every time with me. I guess that says more about me than it does
about
you. But
we're not doing like a give and take, right?
I'm just giving. Yes.
But I always think that that is something that I wish I had some better skills in. And in the 10,000 Women program that Dina Powell, who's now at the White House, when she was at Goldman Sachs, the women that were brought in and that were paired up with mentors, they got to go to a seminar, and I believe it was in Washington, D.C., with a woman who is considered like one of the best teachers of negotiation. And I've always felt that that would have been something that would be useful. I never had any sort of training, or maybe some people do that naturally. And perhaps I do in a way, that because you're right, I do win a lot of arguments.
You win them all because people just want you to be happy. Mine would be to dance, to be a good dancer.
Twinkle toes.
Since I have the suave dance floor moves of a recently hibernated polar bear, it's not really smooth. Okay. Jack Wilbanks, did you watch Miss America on Sunday?
No, but I know about it.
You know that it exists.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the questions were biased? I don't know. I didn't watch the whole thing.
It's true. And you were talking about clickability earlier. Again, why can't we keep all sorts of things separate? I do think that a lot of these pageants try to trap these young women into making comments about politics so that they'll get some attention for it, whether it be negative or positive. And I just think that's unnecessary.
And so that the people from their tribe will say to the judge, like, oh, yeah, you really. The New Yorker had a great comedy piece about Victor Laszlo's blog. Victor Laszlo is the husband in Casablanca, and it's his blog after she goes with him with Rick, and it's very funny. But it talks about how lame, resist is the foolishness of these. It's like, get out and do something. Don't just virtue signal to your own crowd constantly. And Kelsey,
you know, that's
Daniel,
my least favorite phrase right now.
You don't like the phrase virtue signaling?
I can't stand it. I want it,
but it's useful.
Banned.
You know what I mean when I say that, though, right?
I do, but why don't we just say it? I'm sort of like trying to be like, I feel like saying virtue signaling is virtue signaling. Yes.
Yes. It's a shibboleth. Okay.
Last question.
I'm kidding.
Make it a good one.
Kelsey Daniel, what will Big D's next book be? And will you, Steyerwald, ever write a book?
I do not have a book project right now.
Okay.
I don't know if I will. I feel like I really need to be able to write about something I experienced or that I knew that I've done or something. And, you know, my first book was certainly all about my life up until, it included the chapter of starting at the 5. The second book was about Jasper, and that was a lot of fun. It included some art. That was great. Yep. I do have a few ideas, but I'm kind of booked out at the moment, and I think there is something to be said about over-publishing.
My favorite thing,
once a year writing a book.
My favorite thing that you ever wrote was your growing up part of your first book.
What's interesting is that a lot of people, I've worked with Charles Krauthammer and Karl Rove and President George W. Bush and Laura Bush on their books.
So you're saying you're a big deal.
I am kind of a big deal, but
it's not little
person,
D, it's big D.
Each person that goes to write about something that they've done significantly in their lives, like they basically want to write that part. And to an editor, they almost always say, but you can't just show up at age 45 as the president's senior advisor and somebody who was his campaign manager. Like, how did you get to be this person? And almost all of them don't want to write that. They think, oh, no one will be interested. But you know what? It's always the best part of those books. And I would say Charles Krauthammer's opening essay in Things That Matter is one of the best things ever written.
One of the best things ever written.
Karl Rove, that first 100 pages of Courage and Consequence is excellent. I would say the same also about Peggy Noonan's book. Her early upbringing was fascinating, and it really helps you to understand who the people are that you just bought the book of that you want to read. Now, I don't think Hillary Clinton just did that in this current book because I think she's probably already written that book.
She's already written that book. Yeah. I would love for you to write a book for young women, and it could be fictional, it could be real. I would rather see you do a fictional book, but basically a Buildings Roman, a story of growing up. Out mm-hmm. west, mm-hmm. that stuff. I think you would be.
I do have a little bit of an idea, but I'm not going to reveal it here.
Don't
because
reveal
will steal
it now. Don't reveal it now.
So that's a good segue into the trivia.
Oh, good.
Okay, there's a book out this week. We just talked about it. Hillary Clinton, who almost became president. So here's what Jason came up with. I'm going to give you the title of the presidential memoir, and you'll give me the president.
Okay.
Keeping Faith: Memoirs of a President.
H.W.?
Mm-mm.
Keeping Faith, Memoirs of a President. We know it wasn't Bill Clinton. Keeping Faith, Memoirs of a President. I guess Jerry Ford then.
No, it's Jimmy Carter.
Dag nabbit.
Yep.
Okay. I'm gonna stink on ice. Okay.
I think you'll get most of these.
Okay.
At Ease, Stories I Tell to Friends.
Ike.
Yes, you got it. My Life.
What?
The title of the book is called My Life. Do not Google. I can't see you.
How dare you?
I know. You don't cheat. Big C doesn't cheat.
Well, if you're Big D, then I should be Little C. Mm-hmm. Just to keep the irony going. It's got to be Bill Clinton.
It is.
Okay.
See, that's why you're worried. All right. In the Arena, a memoir of victory, defeat, and renewal.
Is that H.W. Bush?
No.
I'm going to keep throwing that one out there.
No. It's Who? In the Arena, a memoir of victory. I'm sorry. It's Richard Nixon. I was going to read it.
Oh, okay. Quite so.
It was Richard Nixon.
Channeling Teddy Roosevelt.
Okay. And now, decision points.
Oh, duh.
Well?
George W. Bush.
That's a great book. So George H.W. Bush wrote All the Best. That's a collection.
Oh, I love All the Best.
That's a great book.
I love that. The Best, it's sort of like the best thing that Reagan wrote, though he didn't commission it, it was done after his passing, were his diary. And the best thing from George H.W. Bush. Did you ever read the Reagan diaries?
Yeah, sure.
Splendid.
Unbelievable. So good.
And then George H.W. Bush, All the Best, the collection of his letters. So good.
So great.
And so great. Just I love it when they do that. His son did a good – he found another device that worked. But so great when you just – you get the real stuff. You get the primary documents. It feels fantastic.
There's a lot of great books about George H.W. Bush, which is interesting because Marlon Fitzwater, who was his press secretary and press mm-hmm. secretary to Reagan, he told me that on January 20th, 1993, when they were leaving mm-hmm. the White House, that he never believed that George H.W. Bush would be thought of fondly.
Oh, really?
No. I mean, and I can understand, like, when you're leaving and your popularity is in the tank and your party didn't win and you feel responsible and you've got to pack it up and go home.
I have a feeling George H.W. Bush left the White House and said.
I think he was okay. I think it was the staff that was not.
I think he knew. I think he knew.
I think
and
so.
And I think the
didn't
the,
he look the, great in that video when the five living presidents did the hurricane relief video?
And I think that one of the things about doing your best, trying your hardest, mm-hmm. is that you sleep soundly after the fact, right? When you have done it all, you have given your, as the saying goes, your utmost for his highest. When you've done it all and you've tried your best, you sleep soundly. You're happy. You know that you did right, even if it wasn't right, even if it didn't work, no matter what, that you tried your best. And that's the gift of virtue. Virtuous people are happier people because they sleep better.
And they don't have to signal anything.
Stipulated. Yes, ma'am.
All right. For more podcasts, go to foxnewspodcast.com and don't forget to subscribe to this one on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a review. This has been Perino and Starwalt, I'll Tell You What, on Fox News Radio.